This week on RSBNB Update, it's Quest Week yet again with Murder on the Border. Is it the best quest since the needle skips? Maude Blackwitch lights up the world yet again, and then we go down the comp redesign rabbit hole once more. Will comp ever be complete? This is RSBNB Update, episode 927, recorded Thursday, March 23rd, 2023, bordering on greatness. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. It is Quest Week here again, the second Quest Week of 2023. The first one was last month with the fort, but that was more of a go build a thing. This is actually a go do a traditional RuneScape quest, and we're gonna give Murder on the Border the full RSBNB Update quest treatment. But some introductions first. Tanis, welcome.
Thank you, Shane.
And joining us for Quest Week is Zerdones from Clan Quest. Welcome.
Hi there. Glad to be back.
And Questcaping, who we haven't yet heard from this year. Welcome, welcome. We got wonderful comments regarding your summary that you did of the 2022 lore part for our Gear in Review episode, going back to when you were last on. So big thank you for that. The community very much enjoyed that episode.
Well, thank you very much, and good to be entering 2023 at last.
Yeah, and, you know, first quest. I feel like this is the first real quest of this year, you know, given, like I said, we had the Fort 4 and 3-1 where you go build the fort, but I feel like that was kind of just scratching the border of what a quest is, and it's on the border. Ha-ha.
Hey. No.
But nonetheless, we're going to go through Murder on the Border. Full disclosure, of course, there will be spoilers during our discussion on it. So if you haven't done that or you don't like spoilers, fast forward to one of the segments using the timestamp markers if you're watching on YouTube, or just pan ahead probably, I'd say, 45-ish minutes or so until the next segment. But if you want to follow along, we do have full show notes available at update.show. You can find me, myself, in-game at Shane12088. Tanis is at Tanis79. Zerdones is Zerdones. And Questcaping is you're just Questcaping right now, right?
That's me.
All right. And, of course, we also do have our Discord at rsbnb.com/Discord in the French chat, Bits Bytes, if you want to hang out in there. Lots of community members and producers you'll see in there while playing. But we got to start with Murder on the Border, and this is the first quest in the Fort 4 and 3 storyline that moves the storyline ahead. And I wanted to emphasize that because that's something I think we'll come back to eventually on this in terms of just saying how the quest went. But to start this quest, it's something that I think somebody could do fairly soon out the gate, thinking about it, because with this, you really only need level 30 construction and having built the level 1 buildings at the fort. So it's not as though it's something that has a huge lore understanding requirement to it or a huge list of skills that are required for it as well. So this is something that all of our fresh starts would actually be doing, I think, if we were still playing on those.
Yeah, they said in the announcement and sort of in the wrap-up of the last storyline that the goal was to do a hard requirement break. So
this
there's
is it.
Not really... Yeah, this is it. This is exactly it. In fact, it's such a hard requirement break, you don't even actually need 30 construction. If you build the Tier 1 buildings, you will get 30 construction just automatically.
Oh, that's interesting. That's interesting. I think
it actually goes up to 32 if you build
all
of them.
Yeah, we never actually calculated that. That's actually a really interesting thing now that you mention it with the fort. And, you know, you were on the episode where we discussed the fort and we said it was aimed at this level band primarily. And I think this just 100% reinforces that.
Yeah, absolutely. This is like... You're dropped into the game, you get from Berthorpe to Lumbridge, you wander north up to Varrock, you find out about this fort you can go to, you build it up, you see, oh, I can build buildings. You build buildings, you're 30 construction, now you can do a quest. There you go, there's an on-ramp.
It's like there's a good amount of design behind this, and the J-Mods actually know what they're doing, right?
Perish the thought.
I'm sorry, I just have to make that recommendation. that connection based on the live stream we got later. But
yeah, funnily enough, this has been very well promoted. I've had people message me who know I play RuneScape and say, hey, I've been seeing ads for this game you play everywhere. Apparently you can build a fort.
Cool.
That's interesting.
People, people could go right in just for this and go all the way up to this.
And I mean, I guess it makes sense we're not getting ads for that because we play the game.
We're already targeted.
Already stuck in.
And you know, we'll never see the numbers on this, but I think it'd be fun to actually see what the conversion rates are on that, because you don't think about that as being something that's going to bring new players in, but it could very well be doing that.
Would like to think so.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's enough. That's enough blabbering about requirements and how this fits into the wider grand strategy. Let's start off with the early parts of the quest here. And it was insinuated that to celebrate us becoming the newest Duke, Duchess, or Dux, whichever title you choose, we're going to be hosting a dinner party for royalty at the fort. And as such, with this, you need to actually build the kitchen. You know, did anybody else have a fun note of the cabbage dummy there?
Yes. I was noticing that.
Fun little in reference there. But
noticed that in the live stream. I'm actually kind of skipping ahead a little bit. I'm a little disappointed we can't just bring her back as the kitchen manager. But
I'm sure she'd do a very good job.
Absolutely. So praise Brassica.
I think what we learned from the kitchen placement is that the extra buildings that are going to go on into the fort are going to be additions onto existing buildings that we have. And you can kind of see that now in the blank spaces that you have between things like the chapel and whatnot, that's what they're probably going to do with this, since the kitchen attached right to your main house there. So I found that interesting, and I think that's a good way of doing it. But
yeah, it's a good option. It's a good way to expand the existing buildings, because I was noticing on the fort release that, like, they said we're going to get more buildings, but, like,
where?
Yeah. There's no room.
And this answers that.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So after the kitchen is complete, the guests start arriving and you get the introductions. Questcaping, I believe you had some words you wanted to go forth on the folks who arrive with this.
Yes, I saw some interesting discussion on how the previous storylines had you feel like it's completely normal to meet a god, whereas this storyline makes it feel genuinely special to meet a duchess, for instance.
Yeah. Okay, I can see that.
It was an interesting scene, the one by one, everyone coming in. And yeah, we've got some existing characters, and we've got some brand new characters, and we've got some of them completely unrelated, some of them sort of linked. Like, we have Duke Horatio's cousin here. It's something. We don't get to kill Duke Horatio.
Janice, you were saying that's what you were hoping for, right?
That's what I was hoping for.
He is otherwise occupied with a cake-related mishap.
Of course.
When is he ever not?
So,
loves cake. I respect it.
So we have King Roll, then the Queen, of course. Is there anything that you took away from your interactions with them at the start of the gates here?
Yeah, I find it interesting that they're going for a redefinition of the relationship here, because the way it used to be, the way it's been established with quests like Garden of Tranquility back in the day, was something. You had Queen Elemaria as the domineering, go puny adventurer, get some seeds, my garden, slaps her husband. She's definitely.
It was very
been
stereotypical and not a good modern way, I'd say.
Not particularly. Yeah, the henpecked husband, King Rold. And he has always been a bit of a pushover, and he still kind of is, just in different ways. And she is still very domineering, just in different ways. And it's nice that they can redefine things without having to make Elemaria somehow be nice, and without having to make Rold not be a pushover. They're still the general sort of archetypes they fit into, but in a more redefined way.
Yeah, and I mean when you
positively.
Yeah, and when you consider these characters, if this were a novel, you would have a huge amount of time to introduce these characters. But I think if you go back and you look at all the Kingrold specific quests that we have and whatnot, the backstory of the king really isn't as fleshed out, and he's not as well known as, you know, as the gods were at the end of the Elder God Wars, let's just say, on that. And maybe that's the kind of character path we're going to take with the king and the queen here.
Mm-hmm. Even in his own quests, the quests that do heavily involve the kingdom of Mistalin, he is kind of overrun by his advisors.
Yeah, and I mean at the end of the day, it puts us in a situation here where they get back to that, and this is what I know you were always up for, Tanis, and I'm sure the rest of you were up for this too, was that kind of palace intrigue-ish kind of story, right? That we mm-hmm. never had for, you know, like the last 10 years or so, because everything had to be a cosmic level event. Whereas with this, you're starting to kind of, you know, see a picture form of, oh, what are this guy's ulterior motives? Maybe she's got something to do with it, so on and so forth, right?
Yeah,
there was a little.
I was going to say, there was. We got some glimpses of that, I felt.
Yeah, but it didn't pan out the way we thought that it was going to.
Not exactly.
Anything else on the king and the queen?
Not particularly.
All right.
Oh, I will say it is surprisingly consistent with novel canon from what I'm hearing.
I heard that too.
Yeah, there are apparently parts in the novels in which it's very much made clear that she was the one pursuing him for all this, and here we go. That's been made clear in different ways.
I also want to point out that the king brought his own wine taster, Simon. Which is
very important, specifically a wine taster.
Which, you know, makes sense. He's not going to actually taste the food.
How very plot relevant wine taster.
Yeah. Then we get to Aster and Bianca. We knew Aster from the fort and the management story on that. Bianca Cook as well.
Yeah, Aster, I think, is probably going to be one of the people we're going to be seeing a lot of in this ongoing fort storyline.
Yeah, she's
going to
be this story's Adrastea.
That's kind of damning with faint praise, I hate to say. But so far, we have a character established. They are someone who likes mystery novels and is a bit tentative about getting into one, especially when their sister ends up being the killer.
Yes, and of course that's the first big spoiler for this. Alarm bells were going off from the very beginning on her, I think. And I didn't read any guides going into this. I didn't watch any streams. Did alarm bells go off for anybody else too?
No, actually.
Okay.
No, I went in completely blind, so.
Yeah.
Me too.
I had a little bit of alarm bells in the quest because she is established as being our kitchen manager, but she's also established as being a walking calamity.
Yeah.
So that was a little odd.
But when you say walking calamity, the interesting part, and this is jumping way ahead here, the part where you have to get into the fight, if you fail in that fight, you forget to bring a weapon or you die, Aster will actually finish the job.
Was it Aster?
I thought it was
Princess.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
I didn't get that scene, but what I've heard is it was Princess comes to rescue.
The dog. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought Aster. Okay, maybe not. That might be crossing things from what I heard there. But in any case, Tanis, did you have any alarm bells regarding
got poisoned. Of course it's the cook.
That's
simple.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Well, there we go. Fair enough. It should have been obvious.
Yeah, and that's what I was wondering with this. Is the quest going to let you, in effect, play it like a game of Clue where you can make that accusation right at the beginning, but no, you have to go through and get all the eight different clues along the way first. We'll talk about that in a minute.
Spacebar.
Yeah, we're getting ahead of ourselves with mystery solving Other characters that come up, the nobles of Mistalyn, that start arriving, which, you know, we haven't really seen much of in a long time, and I think was a welcome departure from where we've been. Questscape, anything on that?
Yeah, we have. We've got some intrigue, both lighthearted and deadly serious. I've got to say, I was a fan of Rodney and his various deceased spouses increasingly coming up.
And in many ways, maybe that was kind of a red herring as well. This guy has so many deceased spouses. Maybe there's something involved with that too.
Yeah, like surprise, surprise.
And her cooking skills, you think?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, that's the format of the story, right? Like this whole quest is very much in the model of things like every Agatha Christie novel, Clue the game, Clue the movie, things like that, where you have this long list of suspects.
Yeah.
All of them have motive, all of them have opportunity, all of them are suspicious, but only one of them did it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very much fits the tone of what they're going for, to have, Rodney kills all of his spouses under suspicious circumstances.
I mean,
Duchess,
we
haven't met yet, has these issues and so on and so forth.
Yeah, and I mean, we are, you know, only a week and a bit from April Fool's. They could have, you know, done an alternate cutscene where the dog murdered someone.
Well,
dog
the dog
endings, yeah.
Saved your life from the guard, so...
And then let's talk about what threw in a good number of people. The mentioning of the place called Lumford, another area that's also part of the Kingdom of Mistalyn that we haven't seen yet.
Yeah, I was...
So is this like an island off the coast? Or like where do we imagine this is in relation to where we are? You got to imagine some connection to the River Lum, right?
Yeah, Lum Springs.
It is a ford over the River Lum, so a shallow river crossing.
Yeah, so, I thought it was just a slang term for the bad side of Lumbridge. Yeah, don't go down Lumford. You gotta watch out.
Where
bad side of town?
Where Bob's axes is? All the crime happens.
That's right.
Down by the cemetery.
So what are we imagining then? Are we imagining somewhere that there be some kind of town that we're not seeing on the map between Varrock and Lumbridge then, or are we talking south of Lumbridge?
I was imagining sort of east of Draenor-ish, where you've got those little farms going up between Varrock.
Yeah, that's kind of the same idea where I was thinking Champions Guild-esque area, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that would make sense. Or over towards the Silvaria area, perhaps.
Ooh.
Oh, that would be interesting.
We really don't have a lot of information. I mean, they said on the live stream that it was explicit. The explicit purpose was to say there is more to the world than just the map.
And introduce players to scale theory.
Pretty much, yeah.
Which is effectively the idea that in our MMO, we can walk from Lumbridge to Varrock in minutes, but if this was the actual world, it would take you days to get there, and you would run into different things and places along the route.
Mm-hmm. I think this is probably the most explicit they've been about it in the game so far, just outright making up a new place out of the cloth. I've seen discussion from Mudjack saying that it's very difficult with the coastline as it currently is, that got locked in by content that might have been released 20 years ago at this point.
Because you can't expand the main RuneScape continent at this point.
Nope.
Well, you can, but it would be odd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of question something like a RuneScape 4 would have to handle.
Right.
You know, increasing distance and space between places to the point where, you know, hey, maybe at that point RuneScape would have to consider mounts and whatnot. And I realize that's an entirely different philosophical question.
We can't canonize horses.
Yeah, that's right.
Hornless unicorns.
Okay, yes. I can't say the H word.
Call them that. Anything else on the guests from anybody before we get into actually solving the murder with the book? No.
Princess is adorable and I love her.
Yes. Yeah, that's what I heard as well. Everybody loved the princess character, the dog. Which,
the little well, park sounds. Sense, so.
I yes. just happen to have a dog named Princess. So
well, there you go.
Perfect.
And a name RuneScape.
Well, one is a beagle and one is a spaniel. Mm-hmm. And those are the beagles you might sometimes hear on the podcast. And I think we used either that one or the other one as a thumbnail one time when we were having problems with that. I say problems, but I mean, yeah. It's amusing in the context it happened. So, solving the murder. We get this book that's reminiscent of the Archaeology Journal, and in there there's a big red X through Duke Cole Horse, who is, of course, the one who was poisoned. And, of course, the reason this happened is that he insisted on having the same thing that the king had with an extra healthy helping of garlic. But I think everybody knows at this point that, you know, you don't go around killing off a random duke. The real target was the king.
Mm-hmm. Not really.
And the plates just got mixed up. And we'll go through how we got there and what Bianca had to say to that after we go through the process of this.
I do want to say I was a little bit disappointed by this, because after everyone is introduced, there's a scene where you go and you talk to everyone, you get a little bit of character introduction. Mm-hmm. And the scene with Duke Horse is him yelling at Aster saying, does the king get a special thing? I want to have the same thing as the king. And then you get a dialogue option where you can either say nothing, say Aster, give the man what he wants, or you can tell Duke Horse to shut it. And I picked the diplomatic option, which is give him the thing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Same.
What I hoped happened was if you picked the tell him to stuff it, then he doesn't get the meal and something changes later
right.
on. There's some consequence for that choice. But instead, what I've been told is Aster overrules you and says no, but thou must.
Not very stewardy of them.
Not very stewardy. It makes sense from like a gameplay design standpoint, because it simplifies everything. It keeps everything to one branch. I was kind of hoping there would be like an actual consequence to that choice. I get it, but...
Yeah, but there has to be that kind of, you know, keep everything down the same path and, in effect, make the player feel like they're part of the storyline. Give them choice, but at the same time, you got to still keep to in general the same freeway, if that makes sense. And
that's
kind of
sounds like our
in retrospect, I feel this particular choice is a bad one to have offered, because you are just going to get overruled on it anyway.
Right, like it works if, like we did, you pick the option they expect you to, but if you pick the other one, then it feels really bad because the game just says no. Bad player.
And then someone dies.
You feel a little railroaded.
And then the question is, how immersion breaking is that if you get told no?
Well, for what it's worth, I'm looking at the transcript right now, and what Aster says is, please allow me to fulfill his request, your grace. If this is what the good Duke wants, we will accommodate him.
Yeah.
So, it feels good enough, like Aster wants to make a good impression. It feels like it works okay character-wise, but also you don't get anything to say to that, and you are the one in charge.
So it is your decision at the end of the day, but at the same time, you're still going to go down that other path. And I can see why that would ruffle some people's feathers on that. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, I mean it's a small thing,
it's
but
a
like
small
if
thing,
I remember
but it can kind of tip money. People off in that regard, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I do have to say the idea of using the book was good. I didn't read too much into this in the news post or in the live stream before because I wanted to interact with it myself. I think it's a good modern way of doing what effectively amounts to RuneScape's murder mystery. Tanis, how hard was it to find all the clues?
They weren't too bad. There was one that I had a hard time, but it wasn't necessarily like the thing that was buried or the satchel behind the tree. The ones that I had trouble with was the actual people, like that Duchess. During the second round of stuff, was kind of hidden in the chapel behind a thing.
Right.
It didn't trigger for me, so it took a long time to figure out where she was, and because there wasn't any reason for me, or at least I didn't think there's any reason to talk to her. Right. Like I was past that. But
and with that, I wonder, would it be too easy or too much to put kind of like sparkling, glowing textures on the things you need to interact with, just to, you know, improve accessibility for it. Granted, you are supposed to find them and examine them.
Well, I will say, I never took advantage of this, but if you talk to Aster at any point during the investigative sections, there is an option to get a hint.
Yes, and I used that at that point, and it was basically just find clues and...
Oh, okay. Like, yeah, so useless. It was
very generic. Yeah, completely.
Okay. Okay, fair enough.
And then the thing that where I started to feel in some cases where I was just stumbling, of course, the first linking of evidence to Bianca and whatnot makes sense right next to the chapel there. But after that, it kind of felt like I was just stumbling along and I was going through the book and saying, can I link this to you? Can I link this to you? And, you know, in many ways, that's the dead reckoning way of completing this quest, which I guess works.
In a way, it is a little rewarding in itself because I could draw some pretty clear links, but also I wanted to see what everyone had to say to everything. And in some cases, there were some fun bits of dialogue.
Yeah, mostly it was like there's one thing that applies to each person and everyone else just says, I don't know anything about this.
Yeah.
Why are you bothering me?
Yeah.
Sometimes with the dog was cute.
Yes. Sometimes if it's someone vaguely associated, they will actually be able to point you towards the right person to be using it on.
Right. Yep.
You know, this is making me want to redo the quest on my fresh start, you know, given the low level requirement for it and just the different ways of interacting with this. I think that might be fun to do after the fact and see if there's time for that this weekend. The book was good, I think. I wonder if we'll be seeing more of this in the future, because I feel like you kind of do this for a murder mystery quest and it's kind of one and done, but I think it's a good way of keeping track of things in a quest, you know, kind of just have a supplementary book on that.
I will say it feels like a good update to one piercing note is RuneScape's classic murder mystery, apart from the actual murder mystery.
Right.
And they had an investigator's journal that was a little less advanced version of this. I'd say this was much better in that it worked as a gameplay mechanic in itself with the linkage and also helped keep track of the characters themselves, because I know I was getting a couple of names mixed up along the way.
Okay.
It was well laid out in that regard.
And you know, this quest is built by questers at the core. Mod Zura, Mod Stu, and Mod Abe.
Holy Trinity.
So that kind of makes sense in terms of the interaction we're seeing here. Very traditional quest interaction on this.
Yeah.
And, you know, that it you can either, of course, you know, throw yourself into it and solve the murder, or you can do it the typical RuneScape way, where I'm going to go talk to everybody and see what trying to link this piece of evidence will be, just to hear that dialogue. So, okay. I'm convinced that both ways of solving this are a viable path then. I'm happy with that. You wanted to mention something about Clue and Easter eggs, Questscaping. What do you got on that?
Yes. Well, I can't in good conscience
call it... Is this the candlestick and the lead pipe and the revolver?
Yes. Yes.
And the rope.
I can't in good conscience call it Clue. In the UK, it is Cluedo.
Right.
But yes. And it felt like a really nice piece of RuneScape humor. I remember checking the subreddit afterwards, and I think about half the posts about this quest were in fact screenshots of one of these objects. So they were in fact red herrings, all of them, naturally.
Yeah.
It was really just fun, especially once I realized the connection between these random objects, just to have a bit of a tribute to the genre and some cheesy jokes to go along with them.
some good classic Mod Stew puns.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
Mod Abe puns. Abe gets in on it too. I shouldn't exclude him.
Oh, up and coming, up and punners.
Oh,
yes,
God.
The pun master and the pun apprentice.
Hey, pun squire.
All right. Yeah. So how did we figure out who did it? I think we already talked about the novel canon bit. So how did we figure out who it was? I mean, like Zerdones and I said, it was kind of obvious that there were some red flags going off with Bianca at the beginning. But how did you, Questcaping Tanis, get to Bianca?
Genuinely, I didn't put it together until the very final series of just recapping it to the assembled crowd and saying, okay, someone had a grudge against Ella Maria and whatever. Just at that point, it all started to click.
And it was
realized. Yeah.
Go ahead.
You really, late in the game, have that revelation about Bianca having stolen from Ella Maria in the first place.
Yeah, and then there was the idea of that, you know, hey, I want to keep you here, right? So that factored into it as well, and that kind of makes sense when you look at it. Tanis, how'd you get to it?
Everything I did was trying to set up Bianca because I thought she was guilty from the beginning.
Her literal name is Bianca Dunnett.
So,
serious?
Yes.
No, yeah. I'm serious, yeah.
Okay. All right. All right. That escaped me. I should pay more attention.
For what it's worth, you do also have Asta done it, so they didn't do it.
Yeah, there's a bit of a red herring.
And for what it's worth, at the end, you can accuse any of them. And I did that, and it's actually quite fun seeing how that goes. Did you guys do that too?
No, but I did read over the transcript and... Yes, you are strongly encouraged not to go accusing the king or queen.
Yeah.
When I got a chance to accuse Bianca, I took it. I was like,
so you just went straight for it?
Straight for it.
Oh, hell yeah.
Okay. Fair enough.
You've been itching for that old quest, hey?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I do like how at the end they let you choose who they let you accuse whoever you want, and then they tell you if you're wrong, but they don't tell you who the right answer is. Like there's sort of a problem with detective games in general, where like they struggle with this idea of letting you figure things out for yourself, and you can really see that tension in this quest. Like compare. The summation, the classic Poirot gathers everyone in a room and explains the crime to them. The game quizzes you and tries to see if you've sussed it out. If you haven't, it'll tell you what the right answer is. Right at the end, it says, okay, who do you think did it? Oh, you're wrong. Guess again. I'm not going to tell you who did it. Figure it out.
Yeah, I prefer it to go the way it did in the quest, too, if I'm being honest. Compared to the traditional investigative game route, I think. So
yeah, it's a hard thing to do. I think like RuneScape is a little constrained in how they do quests. Like honestly, what I was hoping for from this quest, and I wasn't expecting, was something like the classic murder mystery, where you really do actually have to use your brain because who the murderer is random for every player.
Oh, okay.
Like it genuinely can be any of the six suspects in that quest, and the clues will adjust themselves accordingly. Like it rolls for who it is when you start the quest.
I wonder how difficult that would be to write that and then implement that.
Yeah.
Well, it would never happen today because, like, for the same reason that they're trying to do things like bringing back Therisk and who's the other one?
Fiara.
Fiara, thank you. Yes, and Fiara, like, Jagex is very clear that they don't want to be in a situation where characters can be in different states for different players.
Yep.
So they're not going to write a quest where, for me, Bianca is in prison, and for you, Bianca is standing in Fort Free. managing the kitchen.
That makes sense.
That was never going to happen.
That makes sense. And you know, MMO, you can't do that. Whereas, you know, in single player game, you definitely could.
Right, exactly.
I will also add that it's a character-based approach here and character relationships as opposed to almost logic puzzle, which you get in the original Murder Mystery Quest.
Bingo. Bingo.
Definitely.
I was kind of hoping for logic puzzle too, but I settled into the route of the characters with that. That's a very good distinction to make on this. Thank you for that.
Yes, it's primarily a narrative quest and not a puzzle quest.
Yeah.
Which, as someone who kind of likes puzzle quests, is a bit of a shame, but again,
oh, we're going to get our chance for that eventually. You bet.
Elemental Workshop 5.
I hope so. I hope so.
One day, hold the torch.
I do love a good Elemental Workshop.
Oh, boy.
Please.
The listeners are tuning out right now.
Oh, God, we got to get them back.
Not just the listeners.
Oh, no. before we wrap it up with the quest, combat sequence. I was here with a pickaxe. And like you said, if you die, you are going to get into a situation where Princess the Dog will come up and save you. I didn't get to that. I didn't see that. I teleported away before I lost too much HP and picked up a proper weapon and then just smacked the guy regularly. But I did want to note that this continues the trend from Daughter of Chaos and Succession, where we have quest combat encounters that are tailored specifically to you and don't require a huge investment in the combat system, which I think, once again, good thing, 10 out of 10 on that.
Yeah, it makes sense, especially for a low-level quest.
And I will say, if you have to pull a last minute or you just win it anyway, then I will very happily take it doing it in the most ridiculous possible way. The dog saves your life. At Absolutely. Least make it interesting, hey?
Lean into it. Make it a joke. Hey.
I didn't have any trouble.
And I'm assuming this is before you are able to get the little amulet to actually talk and understand the dog, right?
It is, yes.
Yeah. And you know, we need to mention that as well, that we have the amulet of Corgi Speak or Spaniel Speak.
Spaniel Speak,
that it was called. So that was wonderful on this. And you got to know that that's going to come into play again at some point in the future, right?
People want that as a cosmetic now.
Oh, of course they do. It's got a nice little dog face on it, right?
I just want it on my cramulet so I can talk to Princess in the kitchen. Mm-hmm.
Right?
Exclusively Princess.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Are there any other dogs in game that have interaction on them, or is Princess the only one? I'm trying to think.
The pet dogs you can talk to if your summoning level is high enough.
All
like
right.
Not the ones from Yak Track, the ones from the pet shop.
Yes, obviously. Yeah.
None you can talk to. The stray dogs in Varrock you can like shoo away, and I think you can like right click use bones on them for a little interaction.
You're free to play pet.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Your stray dog who follows you around everywhere.
Okay.
There are a couple of dogs.
So an opening definitely for the future on that one. So I feel like Princess is going to be one of the highlights for people in this quest from whichever way that you look at it. So now... We know that it was Bianca at the end of the day, and we're down the Duke of Edgeville by accident. It's supposed to be King Rold. Was anybody? And I'm going to get to the other points we have here in the conclusion. But was anybody thinking that this was probably going to be a bigger person, a more important person that was going to get taken out in this quest?
Not really. That, but I did think it was funny that I was telling them about Ritual to Majorat and how Israel got all burned up when, and then he keeled over.
I told him about Sliske's endgame.
That was funny.
A little bit too much of a recent memory.
Real.
Okay. And I was thinking that, someone large and big and important is going to die from this, and this is going to be our springboard into necromancy. I don't think so.
Yeah, not so much.
No. Not so much. I remember I was reading back through some conversations I was having when the quest was first announced, like when all we knew was that it was going to be a murder mystery.
Yeah.
And I remember kicking around the idea that, oh man, King Rold dying would be such an amazing
story. That's what I thought.
Like, as a core story idea, that's amazing. But, I mean, practically speaking, they'd never do it because he ties into too many other things. Like, he's involved in, like, 9 quests. He's a treasure trail step. Like, they're not going to screw with him because his script is too massive, but...
Yeah, and I mean, it was different to do that in While Guthix Sleeps because those guys were, at the time, you know, just a couple of Slayer Masters, and you could sub them in for other ones and whatnot. But, okay. Yeah,
this guy has so much spaghetti code attached.
I was just thinking there's going to be something more in terms of the ramifications on that, but I'm willing to accept where we wound up on this.
He's too big to fail.
Oh, boy.
Absolutely.
Now, Questscaping, you said that this evoked feelings of one piercing note. Take us down that path.
Yeah, I'm getting the feeling that every so often RuneScape just remakes one piercing note in order to sort of give questing a bit of a shot in the arm. The other time they've done it that I can name is The Needle Skips, which is another classic murder mystery with an investigative interface going around finding clues and very strongly character-based. And I think those are the general points they're hitting in that, in One Piercing Note, and here. And I think... in all cases, it's been a case of refocusing, because One Piercing Note sort of ushered in a new era of character-focused quests, I think, that then took us up to The World Wakes.
Yeah.
I think The Needle Skips came right at the end of a massive quest drought, and that summoned in Desperate Times, Desperate Measures, etc.
And I think if you look at the quest list, The Needle Skips is the first one in the Elder God Wars chapter.
It is, yes. Yep. So it wasn't so much the characters from that became relevant as much as the concepts, but it was really a very good way to bring you into the storyline with something bold and character-focused, and really quite emotive in that case. In this case, it's not so much emotive as it is a really nice mix of RuneScape comedy and also genuine... well, courtroom intrigue, not the royal court intrigue.
Yeah, sure.
Nobility.
Fair enough.
And yeah, and going for that sort of tone, this is where you get the character focus and you really see what sort of people we are going to be focusing on in the storyline ahead. So it's really just an establishing moment, essentially.
It's a good way to refocus after the God Wars saga.
That I agree with, and I see where you're coming from, Questscaping, but I just, for me, One Piercing Note and Needle Skips were, I mean, they're pillars.
They were groundbreaking, revolutionary quests.
They introduced something kind of different, right? One Piercing Note was fully voiced and just beautiful music, and Needle Skips had this whole different system of the way a quest could work, and... you know, nothing wrong with Murder on the Border, but it was just a meh for me. It was just a regular...
okay.
I didn't find anything new at all.
I am glad that you said this. I am glad that you said this, because I had a debate with Sirion this week. He said this was his favorite quest since The Needle Skips. And I'm like, what? Why? Because this quest was... perfectly implemented. It's got wonderful environments, wonderful graphics. It's got a fun story behind it. There is nothing wrong with Murder on the Border. I will give you that. There's nothing wrong with Murder on the Border. But like you said, Danis, I feel that The Needle Skips and One Piercing Note are in their own separate league from this. And that, combined with, I think, the fact that this feels like it didn't move the story that much and it's still on the introduction phase, that's what kind of raised my eyebrow with this. If we're still looking at you know, that 8 to 12 month timeline for this, we're 3 months into the year, there's 8 months to wrap this up. How are we going to, you know, pick this up over the summer and whatnot, right?
I was on the wiki earlier, and what I saw there is that it's a 2-year timeline they're aiming for.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like Mod Jack made a comment to that effect in one of the live streams where it's like the goal is for this to be a 2-year storyline.
Oh, I thought it was 2 years entirely with two different chapters. First chapter this year, second chapter next year, and I was viewing four and three as chapter one. That's how I understood that.
That could be, but I mean, even if that's true, like you'd expect chapter one to sort of end at the point of highest drama.
Mm.
So if we have a year to build up to that climax point, like, I'd say we're in a good build stage for that.
All right. Anyway, sorry to hijack your point, Tannis. Carry on.
Oh, no, that basically...
That was it.
I mean, that basically was the point, because when I think about what does this set up or where does it go...
Right. It's not immediately clear.
It's not clear, because, I mean, maybe there's something more with the queen. I mean, I don't know. It just didn't have the impact that those two, you know, monumental quests had for me.
Good. That's the same boat that I was in. Other side of the argument, how this is the reinvigoration since One Piercing Note? Questcaping Zerdones?
I wouldn't disagree that there's not too much new that this does. It doesn't feel as groundbreaking, but it does feel like the general sort of what they're trying to bring us back in with. And I think, as someone who was really left cold by the whole Succession storyline, I personally...
I think we all were. I remember talking with you about that after the fact, and like, oh, I wish you were available for that episode after that.
Yeah, well, eventually got to talk about it in the 2022 wrap-up, but yes, 2023, I am more enthused about now. I can say that very safely.
Yeah, okay. And to be fair, then, you're not exactly comparing this to the revolutionary nature of something like One Piercing Note. You're just saying that it invigorates RuneScape questing in a way we haven't seen in a while.
Mm-hmm, and it's the same sort of quest to do it with.
Okay, fair enough. Zerdones, do you have anything to add on that?
Yeah, I'm between the two camps. Like, I mean, I agree with Questcaping that... It's a quest that did what it needed to do, which is refocus the stakes down to ground level, kingdom level stuff. Do that very character focus, which is how that's how you de-escalate from galaxy ending stakes and make the story very personal.
Yeah.
So it works in that regard. At the same time, like, I also agree with Tannis that although I see the parallels to One Piercing Note, it doesn't grab me the same way that quest does or Needle Skips. To me, I think the reason why is because those two quests, as originally conceived, and I don't know to what extent One Piercing Note was planned to, or sorry, to what extent the Needle Skips was planned to fit into the larger story arc, but at time of release, both had the sense of being standalone stories, which let them be a little bit more thematic than this was.
That makes sense. That makes sense, because, like, when you think about it, the Needle Skips was unveiling that entire new area, the graphics behind it, and the new storytelling mechanism of the index.
That's true, but not really my point. Okay. My point is, what is Murder on the Border about? Because One Piercing Note is about the tension between, like, faith and disbelief, and it's about, like, finding your role in the world, and it, like, there's a lot of very meaty thematic stuff in it. One Piercing Note is about how you I keep doing this. The Needle Skips is about how we process grief as people, and, like, the bonds between family, parent and child, and again, very meaty thematic weight. What is Murder on the Border about? It's a fine quest. It's very funny. It's well implemented. It does what it needs to do. It's not really about anything.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
It's just a quest in the traditional RuneScape questy quest sense. Mm-hmm.
It's just connect A to B. It's an A to B quest.
Right.
It's a very well done A to B quest, but it's an A to B quest.
Okay.
I think the very most I could give it is a general theme of relationships, like between the various, like you've got the various friendships that have evolved over the years. You've got Bianca and Ella Maria, which is eventually the core of this, but it doesn't feel like as much of an emotional core as the other quests and pulled off.
Mm-hmm. It's not really a through line. It's really just sort of a thing that unravels and you're presented with at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you don't feel the way Bianca felt being left behind. You know what I mean? Like, you don't...
Right.
Because it's a murder mystery, because you're uncovering things as you go, you don't have all that backstory, so you're not as involved and invested in that character to feel that tension, to feel that drama.
Yeah. And with that, I think we've all met in a very key part here in the middle, where we're actually able to kind of say, oh, okay, so Tanis and I felt this way, you guys felt this way, and then we come to this entire conclusion that murder on the border is still redefining in a sense, just like those other were, except it's doing it in a different way. Is that a fair summary of where we went and where we got?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel like I came off very negative, but I do want to emphasize for the listeners, I did like the quest.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
There's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah, absolutely, me too. And, you know, that's the same thing I had to tell Sirion with this. I realize it sounds like I didn't like this quest, but it was well done, yet these things just kind of felt off about it.
Mm-hmm. Just didn't love the quest, hey?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. That's a good way of putting it.
It just, for, you know, it was just a quest, right? Like it, you didn't like talk to people. As soon as you got done with it, you're like, oh my God, can you believe, you know, like,
right.
Like Beetle Skips was. And if I was going to say anything negative or anything, you know, that could have been better, I'll save that for the reward section.
All right. And we do still have a few other things to pick up on that, about where we're headed and where the quest line goes after that. But before we get into those, I want to thank our Patreon supporters, because without you guys, we wouldn't be doing what we do here every month with the podcast. So this week, I'd like to thank Alfie S., Amos Reed, Andrew C., Arvids L., Beekeeper Steve, Big Huge Rat, Chunk the Monk, Cycle RS, Drama Free, Duramax, Enrique V, Free Milk, Jacob G, Jade Gizmo, Jason S, Jeebus, Jesse W, Keski, Ling01, Mohan V, Nate the Great, Pernasius, Ricky A, RS Nerdherd, Samuel FL, Scott DS, Shirtpants, Stub Eve, Tabby, The Naked Captain, The Dabbing Goat, Tim, Tom V, Zat, and Zazicon. Thank you, everybody, for your support. It truly means the world to us. And if you're wondering what all this is about, you can check us out on Patreon at patreon.com/rsbnb. There, we have plans starting for as little as $1 a month. And with that, you'll receive a mention in our show notes each and every week and gain access to an entire back catalog of 55-plus bonus shows discussing a variety of topics, including our famous tier lists from last year, Tanis's brush with legacy combat that he didn't know that he needed but is very thankful for these days, and of course earlier discussions from this year about how to grow RS, what holiday events look like, and so many more. And we actually got a poll running for the next one that we'll be delivering to you guys in the first week of April. So if you want to support the podcast, patreon.com/rsbnb, starting for as little as $1 a month. We also do have two other tiers. We have the VIP tier for $3 a month, where you receive a special rank on our Discord that gives you chat channel access and a rank. And with that, you also get high-quality stereo versions of the podcast, in addition to everything else. If you want to give the ultimate gift, we have our insider tier, where for $5 a month, you'll receive a shout-out on the podcast each and every week and gain exclusive access to the clips that we use to make the clip show at the end of the year. And, of course, big thank you goes out to everybody who allows us to do what we do here. We're going to be doing our roundtable this weekend. If you're listening to this on Friday, Patreon members will already receive the notification that this is happening on Saturday at 4 p.m. Eastern. And this is the time where, you know, we just all gather in Discord. It's a time for listener to come chat with the producers and hosts and just talk about the show, talk about RuneScape. And one of the things we're actually going to be touching on with this is our yearly Patreon survey about where we take our Patreon offerings and whatnot and some of the potential changes we're considering. So all Patreon members will be able to fill that out for the next few weeks past this weekend if you're not able to make it to the roundtable. But of course, a big thank you again to everybody out there for allowing us to do what we do here. All right. So, and we're going to pick up from right where we left off. And I feel like we reached a good conclusion on that. I think the next one is the mysterious Zed, right?
Mm-hmm.
What is this referring to? I mean, you see Zed in RuneScape. Zaros, Zamorak. Is it something else?
All the big names.
Zamorigal.
Yes, speaking of that one in particular, you do in fact receive a letter at some point in the quest, or rather you take a letter off a dead body, the guard who tried to kill you. And it is in fact signed by some unnamed Zed person who appears to be the murderer behind the murderer. In that there's someone ordering Bianca around and telling her what to do. In fact, like, playing off the want to have King Roald dead for some grander, devious plan. And I think, from all I've seen, the top candidate so far is Zamorigal.
Which would make sense if we're going to tie into necromancy as a skill.
Yeah, and that also makes sense to what we saw at the end of the Succession storyline as well. So
yes, also, legendary Varrok hater.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's going to get King Roald one way or another.
And when you put it that way, that's of course what it's got to be, right?
Mm-hmm. He has been there nagging away at Nistlin from the start.
And, you know, I don't know that there's much else to say with that. I feel like it's an open shut case unless you guys have anything else to add in on that.
All of a sudden it's Zanuck.
That's another one.
Zanuck has turned evil. Oh no.
Resurrect Zanuck again for the umpteenth time.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I feel like Zamorigal's the default option there. I don't know that there's much else to say on that. So, Iris and
either we're right or it's a new character and we're not going to guess them anyway. So
yeah. Iris and Silhouette, you brought this one up, Questscaping. I feel like it's been a long time since we heard a Silhouette.
Oh yeah. So this goes way back to archaeology lore. And I think we were looking into it and the last time they were mentioned was around 2021 with the Battle of the Monolith re-release website teasers. So This is pretty obscure as far as lore goes.
Yeah. This is like writings on the wall obscure kind of thing.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I think this is genuinely the first it has been in any sort of mainline quest or any sort of mainline story content that isn't accessible only at the very, very end of your archaeology grind.
Yeah, and my understanding was that, from what we knew at the time, was that Silhouette was, in effect, the modern-day Zerosians, minus the Inquisitor's part.
Mm-hmm. I can't help but wonder how involved they are with Trindine working in the shadows and whatever the hell Wihizatel might be up to.
And could this be a response to players saying they want more of that Zerosian type of influence? Because we got rid of Zaros, you know, more than a year ago at this point. And what happened to him was not explicitly stated at the end of Extinction and Twilight of the Gods bothered some people I know. And as such, that faction has always been a storyline that's evoked strong feelings from parts of the community. So I'm wondering if this could be a way for them to work some of that back in here if you know, start reading between the lines.
This is very much the sort of thing that made Zaros popular in the first place.
Yeah.
The sort of shadowy, mysterious presence.
Yep.
And, you know, once again, it kind of goes back to how Zaros started as well. Zaros was in, you know, an off-hand mention in the dig site quest, and lo and behold, look what became of him. Silhouette here is an off-hand mention in a piece of evidence that you picked up off a dead body in Murder on the Border. And we're not saying it's going to become that, but it definitely could. So, I'd be happy with that. I know I was complaining to somebody the past week. I kind of missed the big storylines and, you know, wanting to know what happened with the writing on the wall and all that sort of stuff, and that what we found underneath Sentist and that sort of thing. But of course, we're not going to get a full answer on that. So,
it certainly isn't dead just yet.
No, not.
No.
So, I think that would be a fun way to go. And, you know, hey, maybe one of the quest designers at Jagex will feel the same way and want to scratch that Zerosian shadowy itch. So,
I mean, here we are in the first major quest of a new storyline. For all we know, this is going to be very prominent going forward.
And that brings us to your last big question on this. Which of the characters are going to be most relevant going forward in this? Is it Zamarigal? Is it Iris potentially working with Silhouette? Is it the traditional King Rold and Queen Alamaria of Varrok sort of business? Is it something else? I feel like Aster is going to be our consistent companion going forward on this. There's no questions about
definitely,
that.
Definitely. Yeah, getting that impression.
Iris, our Watson.
That's a good way of putting it.
There we go, yeah.
Yep.
Iris, I'm not sure about. I think she's just one of many ways Silhouette can manifest here. We already have other Silhouette characters established, for all that there's been very little of Silhouette so far. There is the archaeology guildmaster Ranga. There is also Zephos, who was actually in pre-release for archaeology, the skill in general content. So that's going way back at this point.
Three years ago to the week, probably, exactly.
Mm-hmm. It does feel rather cool that something going from archaeology pre-release may very well be going into necromancy pre-release.
And I think that's an important thing, because there is a lot of things that were cast off in Legacy of Zamorak that people liked in archaeology and the Elder God Wars, just in terms of the mystery behind it, that need to be there. Because I know, you know, writing on the walls in archaeology and the hidden messages behind that were very fun to me to uncover throughout that entire process. And, you know, the tagline for archaeology was "War is coming," and we wound up having that be the Elder God Wars. So the question with this, what kind of foreshadowing is happening for this, and can they pull off that same sense of having a grand storyline without going to those cosmological levels? I feel like that's going to be the true test for the storyline going forward.
Yeah, I think archaeology lore actually gets a pass more than Sixth Age lore, purely because archaeology lore is taking place thousands of years ago by the time you're uncovering it, and as such, it doesn't have as much room to impact on any cosmological level, but it can still very much have made an impact up to the present day. Like, with a lot of those archaeological mysteries, you will find, because RuneScape races can live for thousands of years, in multiple cases, you do often find someone involved in that still alive and still having been impacted from it. So archaeology lore can still very much play into this in its own way.
Yeah, and I think that's a very important thing to keep in mind going forward. And I feel like this is the difference between this and the Legacy of Zamorak storyline. And I think that's probably a good point to leave it, unless you guys have anything else you'd like to add, Murder on the Border wise. No?
Okay. No, I'm good. We're good.
All right, fair enough. Rewards, Tanis, you wanted to talk about these. One quest point, 8,000 construction XP if you're above level 40, 3,000 in any skill above 30, and the kitchen. Tier 1 makes it so that when you cut cobwebs with the sharp object, you never fail. Tier 2 gives you a 3% reduced chance to burn food when cooking in the kitchen. and access to a cooking supply shop. And tier 3 gives you 5% increased cooking XP there and access to a soup station to make port soups.
Yeah.
So if this had been during Fresh Start Worlds and I was a low-level character, it would have been good.
It would have been jumping off the walls.
For where it's at and where I'm at, you know, a reward should reward you for the time, I think, you put in. And I definitely was not rewarded for my time. I could have done something else, you know, much more rewarding.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I think we have to view this with the frame again, that this is that kind of new player quest, like Questcaping was saying. People are getting ads, and then they wander up to the area here, and they build their fort, and then this could be, you know, be the second or third quest that they do. So I think that's an important lens to view this from. But also, when it comes to the kitchen, you're right. It's really not that useful for people who are fully maxed, unless you want that 5% that 5% boost, or you feel the need to make soups there, I guess. You want to not burn food, you're going to throw your cooking cape on. But I think, again, we just don't want to undersell this reward to the people who are mid-level. I think that's a very important thing not to do. And that's my that's really my only thing I wanted to highlight with rewards, is let's just not undersell it. But I agree with you that for high level, it could have been, you know, maybe a little bit more lucrative. Questcaping, Zerdones, any thoughts on that?
I've seen it said that the player-owned port cooking station is going to be more effective in most cases than this. So, yeah, it's not really a new reward space for anyone who's been playing the game for ages and ages. For a new player, different story, but for us, a lot less so.
Yeah, it's very much, like, it's pretty good rewards as a new player. Like, if you're a brand new player, tier 1 rewards will give you, like, a pretty nice QOL, which is otherwise fairly annoying in certain situations. After that, yeah, they're okay. They grow with you.
Yeah.
You can definitely see, like, the design plan of Fort Furin 3 is sort of trying to bring all skilling together and sort of turn the fort into the skilling guild. The all-singing, all-dancing skilling guild.
And that's another thing we were mentioning, is that you look at the mini-map of this place, we're wondering, where are they going to put the extra buildings? But I think it's clear now that they're going to be add-ons to the existing buildings, like add-ons to the chapel, add-ons to the command center sort of thing. Just like this another, was an add-on to that building.
I think another thing that's kind of interesting to note about the kitchen is you can place portable ranges there, but no other portables. And I think that's an interesting design choice.
Ooh.
That is very interesting. Yeah.
So it's gonna, you're gonna get that 5% boost even on the portables. You sold yet, Tannis? Yeah.
Look, like you know, like we've been saying, low to mid level, this is
perfect,
basically.
Yeah,
yeah, four and three, it's basically becoming the low to mid level Prif, right? Like,
yeah,
this
yeah.
is
And that's okay, I think. That's okay.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think it's okay. It'd be more okay if we do another timed event like we had earlier this year.
Another fresh start.
Right. Yeah, fresh start. Yeah, I actually had a thought about that. I'll tell you guys after in post-show on that. It wouldn't go over well, but I don't know if I dreamt it up or whatever. Go ahead.
I'm interested in your thoughts on this, Tannis, as someone who is going for 120 all, because this seems like if you want to go for 120 cooking, it seems like the way to do that is pop down a portable range in the kitchen, put on your cooking cape, and go to town.
Yeah. I mean, I've already hit the 120 cooking, and I basically just did it on portables in, you know, Combat Academy. So this is better because you do get, you know, you do get the boost, but you are still using portables.
Right.
You know, so, yeah. I guess it has that going for it. I'm glad that it does have the banking space, you know, very close. That definitely made it better. Had that not been there, then it wouldn't have held up. But I think for that it does hold up, but it's, I don't know, it's just maybe that's the other problem. Maybe I'm already, since I'm already 120.
Yeah, it's a different perspective. It's a different perspective. Yeah. All right. Final thing, ratings out of 5. Zerdones.
Quest as the whole?
Yes.
3.5.
All right.
Ooh.
Questscaping?
Solid 4 for me.
Tannis?
3.
3 for me as well. Okay. That's kind of what I was expecting. If I'm being honest, I was expecting that to fall around the 3, 3, 3, mid 3, 4 range. So I'm okay with
that.
Pretty
tight cluster.
Yeah. Alrighty. Patch notes this week. Mod Black Witch has outdone herself. A whole suite of graphical updates for lighting. Temple of Light has a lighting update, so it actually lives up to its namesake right now. Mire Ditch area has also been improved, and I need to really underscore Mire Ditch, because in most modern games, you look at the lighting as for cues about the general direction where to go, right? And you can actually do that now in RuneScape with Mire Ditch. You can actually do that now based on where the torches are and how they cast their light. It actually
all the places
shows
where
you
it's most important
as a way
to
go.
And
it's not pitch dark anymore. So out of all of them this week that are talked about, Mire Ditch. Absolutely. Yes.
I just want to say that I think Mod Black Witch should change her name to Mod Bad Bitch, because bad ass changes this week from that.
And with this, there's also the point light shadows that are added. So if your system sees them, you'll actually be able to see shadows off the lighting sources in game, not just the central spotlights that are there. But Moksha Ritual site has also been updated. That's the part of the Orthan Dig site. That's the one with all the pipes and the mats, Tannis.
Okay.
They also rebalance the lighting in the Empyrean Citadel, the Orthan Observation Area, the Amanishi Siryu Arena, Chaos Tunnels, houses.
They're a nightmare.
Yeah, the Chaos Tunnels are a good one, because when you think about it, Chaos Tunnels for Slayer is one of the mid-level Slayer training areas, and that previously had looked like it stepped out of 2007. So that one definitely needed it. Definitely. But also, houses in Yunil, and the one that where it's definitely you're easily most able to see this is actually the Wizards Guild and whatnot. So that's actually really neat. Take a walk through Yunil and the Ooglog area. They also updated the skyboxes there for that one. I honestly can't say enough about that. That I actually first noticed it there because that's one of the dailies I do each and every day is the potion flasks. So that was very noticeable. Stronghold of Player Safety has also been updated. Fankenstrain's Castle, Edgeville Bank area, Dorgish Khan. That should be another good one, but I think from our pre-show discussions, none of us actually managed to make it to Dorgish Khan. We also have the Rex Matriarch's boss arena, and also a whole suite of waterfalls at Baxdorian Falls, Isla Anglerine, which is the Fish Flingers area, Southeast Karamja, and the Ashdale Smugglers Caves have had their waterfalls updated. And they also updated the water pools in Ooglog so that they don't have any gaps between textures and won't be causing flickering effects, and use the modern water effects on there. So
yeah, they actually look like liquid and not whatever they did before.
Plastic.
Mm.
Yeah.
Flat goop.
Yeah. But, you know, this is... I feel like, and if the JMods hear this, then this is wrong. I feel like this is a Mod Black Witch passion project. But just like, you know, this is, it's becoming very clear that these are the sorts of fixes where the JMods, who have their passion areas, Maud Black, which with graphics, Maud Pebble with accessibility, all these things work their way into the game. And we have these focuses that on the whole just make the game so much better. And, you know, on their own, you know, you could have shipped this with a few patch notes and called this an update week, if I'm being 100% honest with with these graphical updates here. But
she's really, really good at this. And, you know, funny enough, it's kind of a under the surface accessibility, because I can see so much better.
Okay.
And the crappy lighting places are, you know, it's so much better. And the same thing, remember, like the same thing with the textures and grass and stuff that she had done earlier.
Yeah.
That might have been last year at this point, but yeah, kudos. Just awesome job.
Yeah. 100% agree on that.
Yep. I'm very glad they've started doing these game jams regularly.
Oh, yeah.
There's
absolutely
really good stuff coming out of these.
Absolutely. On the quest list, the Desperate Creatures and Sin of the Father's quest now appear under the World Guardian sorting category in the quest list. Makes sense. Ariane now has appropriate post-quest dialogue when extinction is complete. I'm betting we heard this and it just disappeared before, because I don't think they would add this almost a year after the fact. On this,
you say that they took them a while to add voice cues to Arch Glacier.
Yeah, and that was another huge accessibility update.
I will say, like, I don't think this is really pushing the needle on the story. I went and I looked at the dialogue; it's not very exciting.
Oh, okay. Oh, you did. Cool, okay. So nothing groundbreaking then.
No, it's basically just Ariane saying she's been studying where the eggs were.
Okay, fair enough. So kind of just closing the loop on that then.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, good. General patch notes. Players can now interact with the Rune Goldberg machine without having to restart the client. And here's one just like our farming animals one from last week. Players can now downgrade more than 4,348 clues in one go.
Oddly specific.
Yeah. The thing that happened with this, from my understanding of what I saw the J-Mons talking about, was this was a case of the loop that would be used for downgrading in bulk effectively reached capacity if you had too many. So it had to be changed.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I can see that.
Players will now no longer get disconnected when feeding animals at the manor farm under certain circumstances. Can't say that's happened to me. So interesting edge case. And I believe that's we can leave the patch notes there for this week. Not too many other groundbreaking changes this week. I think the biggest thing was definitely the graphics. So, all right. Well. Let's strap in. Comp changes.
Nothing controversial here.
No, you're going for trim. I have comp.
I am.
Tannis or Denny plans for comp trim. Or is 120 all the main focus?
120 all is my main focus.
Okay. And questcaping, you come in on this obviously on the master questcape side. I don't know if you're going for trim or whatever, or if you have comp.
Nope, just the questing.
Okay. So this dropped last Friday with a number of changes that they wanted to make to comp and trim with their whole open to feedback angle on this. And we went through a number of these here. And the first one I think that we're going to mention is the Barbarian Assault 1 Penance to the King. This is currently a trim requirement, and they're proposing the ability to remove this, and it requires a Penance King kill, which is hard mode Barbarian Assault, right?
Yeah, so this one requires you need to have killed the queen in order to, so you need to have completed a run of normal mode in order to unlock hard mode in the first place.
Yeah.
And then you need a team of four other people who have also done that, and you have to do all 10 waves of hard mode and then kill the king at the end.
Remove. That's my saying on this one.
I mean, it's to me, it always feels bad to take stuff off trim because it's sort of a tacit admission that this is broken beyond Jagex's interest in fixing it.
Sure.
Yeah. it doesn't feel like it should be, because I'm pretty sure that Owens, you probably got that trim wreck with me, didn't you?
I did, yes. You helped me get that.
Because there are quite a few active Barbarian Assault players still around, and it is... It's not really broken, honestly. It's fairly recent content, if anything. It's about 2014 it got reworked, actually. Something like that. And it's not bad.
But at the same time, it's also something that requires you to get these huge groups together for this. And let's be honest, getting that group of five together for RS is difficult unless you have a dedicated group on it.
So my counter argument to that, and we're skipping ahead a little bit, because one of the things that they're polling, that they're seriously considering, is adding Reaper Crew to Trim. And Reaper Crew requires one kill at every boss, which includes raids, which is, like, what's a raids group? That's 10 people minimum?
Yeah, 10. And you know, getting it to be successful, you can get the group together, but getting it to be successful is a whole other story.
Right, and, like, there's a skill... There's a skill to raids. You need people who know how to raid. I would argue you do for a Barbarian Assault as well. It feels strange.
Okay.
And it feels like it's a tacit admission that minigames are dead content and aren't worth fixing.
That's exactly what I thought when I saw this.
Whether
and why
or not
I
that's true? Like, I mean, like Questcaping said, there are dedicated Barbarian Assault communities. Like, there is a Discord for Barbarian Assault. I haven't used it myself, but I know people who have. And it takes a little bit of work, but you can get a team together, even on fairly short notice.
Mm-hmm. So, for me, I would be consistent all the way through, and I think having a reward this prestigious and this big, I don't think it should ever be dependent on anything group related. I'm just not a fan of that. So, you know, maybe I was traumatized in too many group projects growing up.
And that's where it gets finicky when you start talking about Reaper Crew.
Exactly. I wouldn't have it for anything like that, right? Like, I would be across the board. No, you know, group content, getting teams together, it should not be a requirement for that, but I mean, that's just my opinion.
And from what I've seen of this, this one doesn't appear to be one of the controversial ones.
No, I think most of the community, and especially most of the completionist community, are generally agreeing that minigames aren't really worth it.
Yeah.
There are a few holdouts who are still saying bring back 4K Castle Wars. But those people hopefully are getting the help they need and are not fluttering up the discourse too much.
Another one that was being proposed removal was the 4,000 Chompy Birds, but the Trim community said, no, keep that. That was initial Trim. It's staying there. And Jagex says,
this one was staying there.
I was in the remove Chompy Bird camp on this myself, personally. I haven't done it. If I ever do go for Trim, it will be one of the longer ones. But
at least it's just grindy, right? It's not necessarily RNG. It's not a group content. Like, it's just... Yeah. It's really grindy.
It's really grindy. It's really kind of, by modern standards, badly designed. It's very much a product of 2004.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah.
Enhancers make it a lot better. The enhancers in Prif give you double, basically every chompy kill counts for two. So you only actually have to kill 2,000 chompies.
Fair.
And if you have the Ardoin achievement tasks, each task set gives an increasingly higher chance of spawning two chompies instead of one. Up to, if you've done all of them, it's 100% chance. You always get two instead of one. So really, pretty much. So really, it's an old coil, pop it down. It's a few hours. It is a grind. It's a lot of clicking. My inclination, I don't expect this because it is going to be scoped to quite a lot of work, but my inclination would be just a couple of little tweaks to it, maybe a game jam project, remove, like, there's a hard cap on swamp toads, which are the bait.
Okay.
So the way chompies work, in case no one's done them before, is you get a set of bellows from the cave on the eastern edge by Yanil Gutanoth, the Ogre City. You fill that up at the swamp with swamp gas. It has three charges. You use those charges to inflate swamp toads who are hopping around with really tiny click boxes, which is mm-hmm. a thing that should be solved. You can only hold three toads at a time. If you try and pick up a fourth, you'll lose one you already had, so you're stuck with three. You take those toads, you drop them on the ground, and there's a pretty good but ultimately random chance that a chompy will spawn and try and eat it, and then you kill the chompy. So when you kill a chompy, it just sort of its corpse just lays there on the ground, and you have to go and click on the corpse in order to get
for
the feathers, bones.
Okay.
No, not for it to count.
Okay.
You don't have to click on it for it to count, but the corpses are blocking. So the meta way to deal with it is to put an old at coil down, drop a 9x9 grid. So like go and get like a dozen bellows, fill them all up, plop down an old at coil, fill it up. In sets of three, just maintain a 9x9 grid, a 3x3 grid of toads. The chompies will spawn and your coil will kill them because they only have like 200 health. The problem with that is the corpses stack up, and then the chompies can't walk through the corpses, so they can't get in range of your coil. So then you either lose them, or you have to be picking up the chompy corpses, or you just shoot them with your bow.
Okay,
nightmare chompy graveyard.
Yeah, I see where you're lining this up for a ninja strike then. Basically, improve the click boxes, make it so that they can be passed through, and
remove the limit of three toads in your inventory. They've already made this a little easier because it used to be you could only get one bellows at a time. So if you wanted multiple, you have to use the old drop trick, where
right.
you drop, you pick up one, drop it, pick up one. But now I think you can claim however many you want, which is already an improvement.
All right,
but I think with a little bit of polish, this could be at least not terrible.
Yeah. Okay.
But it is more work, so.
Yeah, and, you know, I want to go through some of the other achievements, too, on here.
Sure.
Are you winning, Zam? Number two, you kill Zamorak at 100% in Rage on Solo. Obviously, Zamorak is on Reaper Crew, but this will now be pulled alongside the Globetrotter Reaper and Master Quest Point Cape. Changes here.
Yeah. This is the other controversial one, because yes, Zamorak is on Trim. Well, it's fairly controversial because 100% solo Zamorak is a massive step up in PVM difficulty to anything else that's on Trim. I think that the next hardest thing on Trim is 100% Telos.
Yeah, and Telos has aged with power creep at this point, where
100%
Telos
is also,
there is basically...
Telos
like
is also
racks.
Dartable.
Yeah, okay.
So good if you point. Really, really don't want to do it, you can go and just use a whole bunch of Death Touch darts.
And you have to imagine at some point Zamorak will become dartable too. I'd imagine that
Maybe.
Will be added at some point in the future. Following in the footsteps required for Master Quest Point Cape, unlock all lore from the Effigy Incubator. There's another time game.
Well, so yeah, so this is already on Master Quest. The proposal is very vague, and they just want to reduce the time gate. They're not clear on how they want to do that. Mod Abe was very clear in his post that this is probably the least implemented of all of them. There's just a vague desire that they want to reduce or remove the time gate. I
feel like we're having a different discussion on this because this is going to Trim, but when this was on Master Quest, it was fine how
now this isn't going on Trim. This isn't going on Trim.
Oh,
this
okay.
is just for Master Quest.
So just kind of smoothing it out over Master Quest then. Okay.
Yeah, because I'm sympathetic because one thing that, like, obviously I'm in Clan Quest. I know a lot of people who decide to go for Master Quest Cave. Pretty much all of them see this achievement and go, oh god.
Right. And for those of us who were playing when this content came out, it wasn't that big of a deal because mm-hmm. we were going month by month talking about the lore, so it wasn't that bad.
And that's what Mod Abe said on the original post. Like, as a ongoing piece of content, the time gate made a lot of sense. As it stands now, it kind of doesn't. I'm sympathetic to that. Selfishly, I don't want the time gate removed, mostly because I don't want them to add an inverted Master Quest cape to Fresh Start. I'm gonna have to go. If they do, I'm going to want it, and I'm going to kill myself getting it.
Oh, no. I'm so sorry.
Selfishly, I don't want it, but I realize it's probably a good change.
Oh, boy. And then both Troubled Brewing tracks now unlock in the Troubled Brewing lobby, which is on Comp for Music Maestro.
Yeah, so this is another one I wanted to talk about, because this is another one of those acknowledging that minigames are dead content. And, I mean, I've helped, I always try to make myself available when people try to get the Troubled Brewing tracks, because I know it can be kind of a pain to get people together. But I thought it was notable that they didn't mention the Penance Queen track, because that's also on comp. You need to get at the Penance, you need to get into wave 10. And I think you actually need to complete wave 10 up to when the Queen arrives.
Yes.
In order to unlock that track. So I thought it interesting that they didn't mention that one. That seems like a strange omission to me.
So Barbarian Assault Hard Mode is dead, but Barbarian Assault Normal Mode is perfectly fine, guys.
Yeah.
I guess the difference is Normal Mode, you can buy the tokens to skip right to Wave 10.
There you go.
And Hard Mode, like, you can, but you still need to have done the waves up to that point.
And the issue with this, and the picture that's painted to this for me, is that there's just so much inconsistency between all these things, even after this post rework, that we're venturing into the territory again of comp cape rework.
Yeah, and I've made that point. I've made that point a few times in conversations I've had with people that, like, my biggest overarching problem, like, most of these I have no problem with. The problems I do have mostly boil down to there doesn't seem to be a consistent design philosophy.
Right.
For comp and trim.
Right. And with that, like, do you really want to go down this path of making these changes without that consistent design philosophy? And that's why I say at this point, why not put this on pause for a bit and come up with some consistent guidelines? And maybe those guidelines exist and they haven't been shared with us yet. But if they don't exist, well, they should be created.
I was reading back through some of the dev blogs about the comp rework, because honestly, like, my sort of in a dream world with unlimited time and money, I kind of feel like the comprehensive comp rework is the way to go now.
I never thought I'd hear those words again. Like, Tannis?
Yeah.
You remember how long we bashed our heads in over that update?
Yeah, we sure did.
Dark memories.
I think scrapping it in 2019 was the right decision. I think in 2023 we can handle it. Am I way out in the weeds on this?
Like, no, you're not. Because
no, you,
that was
have a you have faith in humanity, and I don't.
Because that was the first thing I thought of when I saw this, is that, okay, these are all wonderful changes to the comp and trim system, but it still feels wildly inconsistent.
Yeah.
So, maybe, and, you know, getting the community feedback is fine, and this falls in it. Layer 4, as we're going to talk about in ModJack stream next, the things that are being fixed. But the polls, and, you know, let's spend a bit of time on these. Should Reaper Crew be required to unlock trim?
Well, my thoughts are on the document.
Yeah, and I feel like this is going to pass with the community. I feel like this is going to pass.
I agree. I think this will pass easily.
Yeah. And we don't know what the threshold is. Is it, whether it's going to be a simple 50%, 60%, or old school 70%?
We actually do know. There is no threshold because this isn't a guaranteed content poll.
Okay.
So Modfowl clarified that on Reddit. The intent is they want to get a sense of what the community thinks, but the poll is not the final.
So the poll is non-binding.
Right. That being said, depending on how much, like, if hypothetically speaking, if 100% of people say yes, Reaper Crew should be added to trim, I struggle to imagine they wouldn't add it to trim.
Yeah, but if it's
at the
50,
same time,
50,
it's 0%, yeah,
you're gonna have a different conversation.
Yeah, so I do think it'll weigh quite heavily on their decision, but it's not a binding poll.
Yeah, I honestly don't know which way I would vote. Tanis, which way would you vote?
I would vote no.
Okay. Questscaping?
No strong opinion, honestly.
Okay. Yes or no?
Fine. No.
Okay. I'd vote yes. Now here's one. Here's one. This is one of Earth's favorite polls. Should Master Questscape be required to unlock Trim? He is adamantly in the yes area on this one. Yes. Earth is. And you know, I feel like this one is a yes for me as well, and I feel like this one should pass, but I feel, unlike the Reaper Crew one, this one won't pass.
Yeah, I also think it won't pass. Regardless of my personal feelings on whether or not it should pass, I don't think it will.
And that was my you know, my first quick take on that, very much in the same line as you. Tanis?
I guess I'm really the odd man out. I would have voted no, too.
All right. Questscaping? You're the one with the most stake in this question.
I'm biased, and I'd say yes.
Okay.
Interesting, because I also have Master Questscape, and I'm part of why I'm leaning no is because I do have Master Questscape, and I kind of don't want all the twitchy completionists to have just gotten it just because.
Right, keeping it kind of as like the lore in Questscape, whereas
Master Questscape is the kind of thing, until very recently, there's only two reasons you went for it. Either you really liked the lore, or you were a hardcore cluer because of the teleports. But they've removed the teleports, so now the cluers aren't doing it.
So it's nice and exclusive. This is my I care about lore cape.
Right, exactly.
And I can see that as well. You don't want people just, you know, space barring through things just to tick off their trim requirements.
Yeah, I mean, I talk about this a little bit in my more detailed notes, but like, philosophically, to me, trim makes sense as I deeply understand the game. And like,
whereas Master Quest can sit on its own as being, I deeply understand quests and lore.
Well, I think in theory, I deeply understand the game should encompass I deeply understand the lore. I think in practice, it's not going to, because the people who want trim are just taking off boxes.
Yep.
And they end up understanding a large chunk of the game just through sheer repetition.
Yep.
The lore doesn't work that way.
Very true. That's actually a really interesting perspective. And from that case, you might have swayed me to the no category on this. Interesting.
But at the same time, I'm also sympathetic to Earth's position, which is trim should be everything. Trim should have all content, including lore content. So I don't know. I can't decide.
I'm on the trim should have everything camp, but I also think, as far as your point goes about wanting just the Master Quest capers to be really actual caring about lore people, who's going to be wearing that cape? The trimmers are probably going to be wearing the trim comp cape if they, or their comp cape, naturally, because that reflects what they're going for in the game. And outside, particularly some fashionscape or another, the Master Quest capers, people who are going to be wearing that cape are generally the people who want that to reflect what they want to present themselves with their playstyle.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's true. You're not wrong.
So still, mostly, you can tell who's actually a quester from their cape. Mostly.
Okay. Should Globetrotter be required to unlock Trim? Full Globetrotter. I honestly don't think this is the case, because just consider how many clues you have to get for that.
Yeah, so full Globetrotter requires, I think it's about 4,500 treasure trail points.
Yeah.
Which is quite a significant number of clues.
Yeah.
That being said, it's strange that there's not more clue stuff on Trim. And, yeah, they're not... In the proposals, the clue achievements are only being added to comp, not to trim. So it feels odd that there's treasure trails on comp, but not on trim. That feels wrong to me.
Yeah.
That does seem odd.
I'm a firm no in that category. Tanis, Questscaping.
Yeah, I don't think it should be on either of them. Just as too much RNG.
Yeah, same here, honestly.
All right. And then should we consider renaming the comp and trim capes to better fit the requirements? And here we go.
So this question was a late addition.
Yeah, I feel like this is the thing that opens up the whole comp rework again.
Yeah, because one of the things that comes up a lot in the discourse is, well, what does it mean to be complete?
Bingo.
And there are people who will say, the completionist cape is for completing the game. It should have everything. It should be max rune score. It should be true trimmed, which, if you don't know what that is like max rune score plus all logs, like clue logs, boss logs, slayer logs, plus you've maxed out resources in ports. Like you've got up, you've maxed every number in the game. It is the end boss of RuneScape.
Yeah, and
it's brutal.
Yeah, and you know, with that, you start getting into that question of where does everything fit on here, and here you're opening up the can of the worms into, you know, why not at this point just do the comp rework?
Like I said,
and this is the pitfall that you get when you start looking into asking for community support on these ideas. You start with a list of comp and trim comp cape changes, and here we are. A week later, we're almost proposing to change the definition of what the trim and comp capes are. And if that was the initial part of the plan, fine. But at that point, wouldn't it make sense to kind of just do the full comp cape rework? I don't know.
There's a real rabbit hole you're opening up whenever you start to prod at this.
Yep. And I was very surprised when I saw Mod Abe asking on Twitter for suggestions for things that should go on comp, because, yeah, this is a can of worms.
It's like opening the Constitution of Canada.
it's like opening the Necronomicon is what it is.
I mean, Tanis, I feel like we're going to be back next week talking about this. Where do you want to end with this one this week? Because I feel like we're back in comp rework territory now.
We are back in comp rework territory now. And I don't think the reception's going to be any better than it was then. So, yeah.
We'll just go from where we were last week and hand this off to Mod Doom and CM to decide when it's time to move on from this. I think that's where we go from that.
Yeah, so these changes are due in April, and the poll... They're due for a strike in April. The poll will drop at the same time. What happens after that is in Brassica's hands. Brassica's leaves.
I just lost all will to, you know, continue on with this discussion on this, because we're going to be going down a rabbit hole here, and there's not going to be any firm conclusion on this based on, you know, two or three of these poll questions. Like, the first poll question regarding Reaper Crew is fine. The second poll question regarding Master Questscape is okay. It starts to raise those questions. But the other two, you get into the weeds on this. And
yeah, you get into really complicated questions about how do we define what is our philosophy of...
Yeah. If you're going to do these polls, let's at least get down some guidelines first of what trim is, what comp is, and what an achievement requires to go on either of those. And then based on that, you can have the discussion about whether or not they need to be renamed and what needs to be added. I think that's where you go from here. So, or you can ask the question, do the JMods even understand the game in Mod Jack's live stream this week? I'm sorry, Tanis. Let's just get your idea out here first on this, because I didn't know you felt this way until we talked about it in pre-show.
I didn't like the title of this really very much at all. I mean, I guess it was done to
clickbait
drum up
on Twitch. Yeah.
A very baity title.
But it feeds the beast that is RuneScape whiners.
And the issue, as I see it, is this was a wonderful Mod Jack livestream for the people who like Mod Jack. But for people who have the mindset that the JMods don't understand the game, this live stream I don't think is going to move the needle.
No, they're gonna do what they do. They're gonna cry.
If anything, this convinced them even harder.
Right?
Yeah,
based
on, there's no convincing.
Actually, you're right. Based on some of the discussion I saw in some of the Twitch chat that was happening.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He started off with Mod Jack's all singing, all dancing pyramid of design, in which he laid out the four levels of RuneScape. Design in terms of strategy, who does what job and how does the game work, and this is where you have your design vision, that's where he sits. Then you have your systems, which is your core systems design, like combat and skilling and the strategies involved around those, specifically between maybe low intensity versus high intensity options in both the combat and the skilling side. That's at the systems level. Then at the contents level, layer three, you have the implementation of other pieces of content, like Zamorak, a weapon, or a specific quest. And then the tier four is the, or layer four is interactions, quirks, bugs, and quality of life. And this is where everything else above interacts with everything else. This is where the players have most of their concerns. This is where things like Chincendiary Shot and Fortick auto-attacking come in. So, the lesson from this live stream is that everything flows top to bottom. And then that's why players will then raise the discussion. Why aren't you taking this into account when they're talking about a specific interaction? And the thing is that if there's some policy change that's made at layer 1, 2, or 3 in terms of strategy, that might have five different ramifications down the line. And the example he gave is everybody's favorite. What if you make RuneScape not beholden to the tick system? And he said from the point of view of systems in terms of combat, then at that content level, everything would touch way more individual pieces of content if you were to remove the tick system. Like, every cutscene would have to be updated. And then with that, there are subsequent changes at layer 4 where so many things would change on an interaction-based level that can't even be imagined yet. In particular, the example he gave is you change one thing at layer 1. That snowballs to 5 at layer 2, then 100 at layer 3, and 10,000 at layer 4. And this is where I saw the community first push back is, no, you can change your strategy and you won't have 10,000 changes at layer 4.
And see, and I'm from the point of view of, yeah, there's 10,000 changes and it would be worth it. 100%.
And at that point, if you change something so big at those higher up ones, then those are the updates that take a lot of time. Like if you were to rework the construction scale, I think, or you were to remove the tick system.
I mean, that's true, but you would have an actual true combat system instead of a glorified. I mean, the difference, I mean, right now we have a glorified QuickTime event. It's what it is.
That's true.
I had this revelation. I thought of it this week. I was like, this is a glorified QuickTime event. I hate QuickTime events. Like, it's no wonder that I don't like the combat in this game. I'm like, oh, that's why I don't like it. It's a QuickTime event.
Because it moves so slow, relatively, compared to everything else out there.
You gotta catch the little cues and hit them at just the right time.
And
it's actually about fighting.
Game, but a snail's pace rhythm game.
Yeah. I mean, find another game that does it like RuneScape does it. We'll wait. But he said, another example he gave is that you could have a strategy that content should feel rewarding. That's a decision the lead designer would make. But then at the systems level, you have things like you implement that by saying PVM is hard and should be rewarding. That then becomes a combat and PVM strategy level decision that you would talk to somebody like a combat designer. Or a skill should be rewarding. That'd be a skill designer. Then at the content table, on the combat side, that might be something like fixing bad drop tables. Then you get further down to the interactions around that. In particular, this is where you see and where you would fix stone spirits are a bad drop. And that's where you get into things like utilizing the ninja team, focusing on optimization and player feedback. And he said, you know, 4-tick auto-attacking or channel canceling, as they call it in-game, is taking advantage of a quirk that exists entirely at Tier 4. They could easily remove that, but at the same time, it would take away something the players have started revolving themselves around that wasn't necessarily supposed to be that way. And he said, J-Mods appear ignorant because they can't have a discussion about the thousands of pieces of interaction that happen when a specific piece of content is changed.
This was one of the key takeaways for me.
Yeah.
Because the thing that players always do whenever there's a general Q&A stream, like pretty much every general Q&A stream, the questions are either, when will you do this piece of content, which is JMods can't talk about that for different reasons. The other major category is, why won't you fix this bug? Or this specific interaction needs to be fixed. Why won't you do it? And that is a conversation. Like, there are reasons for that. But there are so many of these interactions, and it takes time to explain all of them. You can't answer those questions in a live stream unless you're going to chain them to it, like you're going to lock them in the stream room for a week.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not possible. There's not enough time in the day.
Yeah. And that's why JMods appear ignorant, key term there. And then he bounced off of that to the Chincendiary changes by saying that this was just a bug fix that had a wide-ranging impact on ranged combat. In reality, he said, you can't make decisions based on an extremely small, nuanced implication unless it interferes with things at a strategy level.
Mm. Who said that?
Mod Jack.
Mm. Seems like I've heard it somewhere before.
I'm sorry. What are you going for?
I'm pretty sure I made a very similar point.
And see, this is the thing. And I still don't think players are going to understand this. Because he eventually got to the point, whereas if you start worrying about causing problems by fixing these interactions, you're going to be in a situation where you can't change anything.
Here's the thing, though, that I think Mod Jack and even you, to a certain extent, Shane, are missing with this whole discussion. You're thinking that people are coming into this wanting to understand.
Or they want an engineering perspective.
That is incorrect. They don't want to understand. They don't give a shit. They want their way, and that is it. And if they don't get their way, they are going to whine, they are going to cry, and they are going to throw tantrums. But this is not about having a discussion and, here, let me educate you on how it works. No, they don't care. They've never cared. They want their way. Period.
I will say, I wouldn't be quite as universally cynical on the topic. Like, I have cut down on the amount I lurk on the RuneScape subreddit significantly, but I did troll around a little bit in preparation for this podcast, and I did see a fair amount of positive comments directed at Mod Jack saying, thank you for doing this, we appreciate that you do this, your explanations make sense.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
There are people that he is reaching. At the same time, like, you're 100% right, Tanis, there is a vocal subset of the community that doesn't care. They just want to be angry. You're never going to reach them. Those people exist. They definitely exist. But there are also people who I think are getting something out of these.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the people getting something out of them, I don't put them in that previous category. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think they fit it to begin with.
And then he made the connection that the disconnect is that when players say, why aren't you employing as designers the best players, the ones who are the most efficient? Well, Mod Jack said, they are crucial. Those players are crucial in terms of their input, and they might be great game designers when they think at a strategy level. But in practice, understanding the optimization layer does not equip you to make decisions at the strategy layer. In practice, it will paralyze you into, we can't change that.
So really, the only answer to the question posed by the title is, do JMods even understand the game? To some extent, it's not helpful.
Right, and that's what we said with Mod Doom, is that he doesn't need to be the best PVMer. He doesn't need to be going for 120 all. He needs to be able to communicate and interact with the community to do his job as CM successful. Whereas you can say the exact same thing for any content developer at Jagex. They need to understand the project that they're working on. They don't need to be wide-ranging experts of it, of the game. Sure, they have a few of those mods out there who exist, but not everyone has to be that way. Or should they look for that when they hire people?
The framing of JMods should understand the game on the level of players. Like, not even getting into the question of, like, if you're working on the game, you should understand the game to the level of, like, a Lucario. But even just, you should understand the game on the level of an engaged player. That's a really strange framing if you think about a games company as a software company.
Right.
Because I've worked in software for 10 years. I have never gone into a job interview where I've been asked, do you use our product? And if I answer no, they show me the door.
Precisely. Precisely. People would be surprised how many times in the games industry people work on a game and they don't even play it.
And in some ways, that's a good thing, because like that's how you get fresh perspective. That's how you get new ideas.
Yeah. And he said the reason why a JMod might not pay attention to a specific concern regarding an interaction change is that they can't have a strategic level discussion while discussing every single implementation of that strategy. And he said that could be a strategy decision. Then is that, well, you might assume then the next lead designer might say, hey, RuneScape is a sufficiently stable and mature developed game, so it might be the case that any design change might only make it worse. Oh, sorry, from this point forward, you only get QOL fixes. And that's the route you go into if you cement yourself into something where, you know, hey, we don't really want to change the interaction layer too much because people like their toys. Which isn't a healthy state for the game, I think.
So, you know, it's a state for the game. It's the life support state.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know that everyone who is screaming for various fixes to be made immediately would not be satisfied with the game in this state.
Yeah. No. Yeah,
because those are also the ones screaming about, why is there no content updates? Where's my weekly content?
Everything at once now, please.
Yeah, and I mean, look, we got to credit Mod Jack for doing these live streams. And the JMods, and in particular the communications with the comp changes, have been remarkably open, more so than you'd see in a lot of other games, I think, out there. Once again, I hope they are not shooting themselves in the foot by doing this. I really hope that this doesn't make things worse on this in terms of creating perceptions about the JMods and whatnot. So,
I got really some pretty big feet.
Yeah. Two final notes. He said that there should be reasons to engage with PVM beyond just accumulating GP through drops. And he said this is a strategy level discussion that creates a design to solve that. And that discussion around that means that if you implement that, you won't be able to say what your GP per hour is, or what your DPS will be, or what Decimate will be looking like. It's just that it makes PVM more engaging beyond collecting GP. Which I think makes sense, and that's a good strategy to have. And then one of the final things I took notes on here is that he said, I don't think the outpouring of emotion over the fractured staff by players is unjustified. Which is another thing that came up after the fractured staff changes came out, and more so the incendiary changes came out, is that Jagex was ignoring how players felt about this. And I think it's really good that he said, that, you know, hey, we hear you. I don't think what you're saying over this is an unjustified opinion. So overall, some good, some bad in this live stream. I would have liked this live stream to have reached a wider player base and I think been maybe condensed down by about a half hour or so. But that's really the only points of feedback that I have on it, aside from what we've already gone through. Anybody else have anything before we move on to our last thing?
Yeah, I think these live streams are very good, and I appreciate the spirit of openness they foster. Just the very nature of having a game developer, like the game designer, have such a spirit of openness, talking about the genuine processes behind everything and demystifying it. I think that genuinely does do a bit to swing over some people who won't be the absolute raging Redditors, yeah, but might be a little on the fence and might have some knee-jerk opinions if they don't realize the actual processes behind it. I think it does do something to quell the people who might not realize exactly what is going on.
That's a fair point. I agree.
Yeah. I really enjoy these streams. I like that he does them.
Yeah. Anything else, Tanis, before we move on to our achievements?
Nope, that's it for me. Starting off, we have Dat Engineer with 120 Hunter on March 22nd. And we have Ozoyo with 120 Mining on March 21st.
Right on.
And on March 18th, we have two achievements. We have Duke Juker with 200 million Fire Making XP, and Sebage with 120 Smithing.
Always knew he'd come back.
And back to March 17th, we have 82nd Airborne with 120 Divination, and Coforge with 200 million Constitution XP.
Rightio, and then on the 17th as well, we have Worst Tasker with 99 Fletching, 99 Fire Making, and then on the 16th with 99 Magic. Congratulations. And speaking of tasks, quest caping, you have a pick of the week with that same word in it. I've never watched this YouTube channel, so I can't tell if it's exactly the same on that or not.
Well, funnily enough, it's not that different. RuneScape has a hobby of assigning you some rather weird and wonderful tasks at times. I can imagine something like buy up all the kinds of alcohol in the game and give them to the drunken dwarf would fit rather well for this. Because what I am recommending is a TV show called Taskmaster. It is actually beginning its 15th series next week. It is a British comedy show, kind of a game show, more like a panel show if you're familiar with that sort of genre. That's really kind of unique to the UK, honestly.
Okay.
And yeah. So what they do is they get together five different British comedians over the course of a series, and they have them compete in rather nonsensical challenges. Watch their absolutely bewildered and flustered approaches to it and communally laugh at them. But in the spirit of British comedy, it is all in good fun. And it's very popular. It definitely became very popular over the pandemic, especially because of how accessible it is. Almost the entirety of it is legally free on YouTube to watch if you so wish. And that is how I got into it. Came down with COVID one of those days and just absolutely zonked out on the sofa.
Okay.
Yep. It was my lifeline. I laughed, hoarse as my throat was. It was excellent.
Are you going to get something out of this show if you're not a fan of British humor, I have to ask?
Honestly, I want to say, if you're not a fan of British humor, what are you doing with your life?
Okay. Because I feel like us Canadians go 50-50 about whether or not we assimilate up to British humor.
Mm-hmm. I feel it's... Well, what I generally find with American comedy shows is that they go far too laugh a minute and fast pace for my liking, and what I prefer is a more dry and honestly kind of surreal approach sometimes. But I think if you do like your laughs thick and fast, then there is no shortage of absolute nonsense to behold on this very show.
All right, fair enough. Zerdon's Tanis, you guys ever heard of this before?
I have not.
Okay.
I've heard of it, but I haven't seen it.
Okay, so good pick of the week then. Thank you, Questscaping, for that.
Thank you.
And, you know, I think that's a good thing, having shows on YouTube and whatnot these days. That's something that has really evolved over time. Previously, you didn't see anything like that. Now you do. So I think that's proving to be a good format. There's a couple of
UK panel shows that do that. I think it's a good move.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very digestible.
Be interesting mm-hmm. to see what would happen with that if we had that for some of our North American productions in that. So. Reminder, help wanted. If you guys want to be a guest on the podcast, or you think you might have some skill set to offer us, visit update.show/help. We are running our help wanted form. Just fill it out there. Tell us a bit about yourself, what you think you have to offer, and I'll be in contact with you sooner or later. update.show/help. What have we been up to? Let's go to user don'ts first.
Well, my long-term goal, sort of alluded to earlier, is going for trim. I'm down to my last achievement on that. I just need to get all my barbarian assault rolls.
Oh, that's
up.
Not too bad.
I am 1,200 points away. So that's 7 Horns of Honor. So that should be, assuming the wiki algorithm is in fact uncompletely solved, that should be landing in mid-May.
So nice they added that to the Traveling Merchant, isn't it?
It is. It makes it a lot easier.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, having just had this conversation about how accessible Barbarian Assault is. Great. You can just buy Barbarian Assault. Yeah, sure.
Okay. And there's a reason for it, and that's why I felt so conflicted with that when we were talking about that, because that was at the back of my mind.
In my defense, I never said I wasn't a hypocrite.
Oh, yeah, that's fine. You're allowed to be that here. You're allowed to be that here. Tanis, what have you been up to?
I did the quest and basically still making mahogany frames, about up to 4K so far. And gonna just keep doing it. And then,
not bad.
Yeah, we'll bank some double XP, and then we'll start working on our construction grind.
Right on. How about you, Questscaping?
I've been a bit of a shake-up in the personal life as of late, so RuneScape has not been a priority, but I saw the new quest released, and I went, okay, fine, I have to take a look at this fort thing. And really, I sort of got into a strange meditative state, finally doing all this 40 grind, really just zoning out, clicking those sparkly construction frames.
Oh, I forgot to mention it. You can walk on the walls of the fort now this week.
You can. Oh, you can look over your kingdom, your duchy.
Settlements.
God,
we were wondering why that wasn't a thing with the actual fort update, but it's here now.
Yes.
It is pretty beautiful.
You can only walk on the southern wall.
Yeah,
currently the southern and the eastern wall,
which makes sense because it's kind of hard to find a ladder spot in the other one. So
yeah.
Okay.
It is enough that you can look over the wilderness to a decent amount. You can survey the threats from the north,
which is, you know, probably where we'll be going with the next quest after dealing with this murder mystery. So that's all well and good. As for me, I've been once again on the very hypnotic yak track path. I have to say, I believe I'm on task 30 right now, so we're not even half done yet, but we're still less than half of the time there. But it feels like it's easier to progress with the task A's than the skill and kill. I do have to say that. And, you know, I feel like if you can stomach the agility, the summoning, and the dungeoneering ones, task A's are not too bad. I feel like going forward, the only task A's that really need to be looked at in terms of providing something that's a little bit easier to access is the fire-making one, because there's no way in hell we want to burn elder logs at this point, given how much those cost for these fire-making ones. So,
you know, I was doing those fire-making tasks, and I actually didn't find them so bad because I was also doing the woodcutting tasks on Elder, all of the woodcutting tasks I did on Elder trees with Dwarven chain axes.
Oh,
good combination.
Double resource.
Oh, okay. See, I did my woodcutting ones with bamboo.
Yeah. See, I did them on elders because I knew the fire making was coming, and I wanted to do the fire making because I want the pet. So I was definitely
fire
doing
making
all
is
the
a hard pet
ones.
To get.
It's a really annoying pet. I still don't have the damn thing.
Well, you played it smart.
I thought I did anyway.
Yeah, and I guess I was in the situation myself where I really didn't want to spend too much time on that because I just finished 120 woodcutting late last year. So there's that.
Yeah.
And I guess when you look at it from that angle, that makes sense. There's also the chance of getting the arrowheads, but those have become pennies over time as well for splintering. And I feel like I need to check in with you, Tanis. Where are you at with your skill and kill? Because we've been kind of going opposite ends of that. I've been doing the A, you've been doing the skill and kill.
30. I'm on half 30.
Oh, so we're the same.
I guess. That's
interesting.
A little slow, but yeah.
Yeah, okay. Weird. I'm going to be interested to see what the metrics of this yak track looks like at the end of this, knowing, you know, how this goes and whether or not they did a good thing with this. I think we'll see based on if they keep the tasks going to 70 and if they keep the longer extension through it. But that's all, of course, a topic for another day. Anybody else have anything before we wrap this one up?
I'm good.
Okay. Yeah, I'm good.
Well, thanks for being here again, Questscaping and Zerdones. Good to have you both back.
Thank you very much.
And as per usual, Tanis and I will be back next week for another episode of Update. If you want the podcast delivered automatically to you, the best way to do that is to subscribe. We're on all the podcast listeners out there, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, Pocket Cast, Amazon, even Stitcher. That's more of an obscure one, but update.show/subscribe. And we're also on YouTube at youtube.com/rsbnb. That's where we post the video version of the shows and the nibbles, short little clips of the podcast. We'll have a few of those good ones up. So if you like those or you just like the podcast, give us a like and subscribe. Greatly helps the channel out. But with that being said, see you next week, everyone. Take care.
Bye-bye.
See ya.